Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hear this, right now.
Welcome.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Ropp and Jason Sukanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Hi. What's your name?
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I was looking up Julio Jones' stats.
Yeah, he retired.
Yeah, I just wanted to see where he ranked all time.
And? What do we got?
Well,
a lot of yards, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, not as many as you think.
Is he top 25?
So, when I was looking through, as far as career leaders receptions, he's 26th. Yards, he's 16th. And then I was dude, that guy is a Hall of Fame player. But I don't know. Today I was listening to the narrative, and Julio Jones was never the best receiver in football. He was a 2-time All Pro, 7-time Pro Bowler. He was a really, really, really good receiver. He's a Hall of Fame receiver, but he's closer to Andre Johnson than he is to like Terrell Owens or Jerry Rice. So. And that's not a knock on his career. The dude was amazing. He's just not quite at
well,
that.
Well, Andre Johnson was good.
Andre Johnson was great. Again, Hall of Fame. He will be in the Hall of Fame. Is he the best of his generation? No. And I think sometimes we when someone retires and they had a really good career, we kind of try to shoehorn them. There's that he was the fastest, you know, to this or the generational talent. Well, no. He was a great high school player, great collegiate player, great NFL player. Goes into Canton at some point with a gold jacket, probably. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? I don't think so.
What if he died? Would you have to say a little bit more about him? Like you'd have to make him a little better?
I don't like doing that. I'd like to be honest in my assessment. And that's the way I viewed him. So I wanted to see, because, you know, sometimes with guys, the numbers can lie to you. Like your eyes will tell you that they're better than they are, or your eyes will tell you that one thing, well, and then you look at the numbers and you're like, oh my God, that's way better than I thought.
You know who the ultimate example of that is? Andy Dalton.
Yes.
Go look at his numbers, dude.
They're phenomenal.
Yeah, well, he's got a lot. He has compiled a lot of numbers.
Yes. Better than you think.
But he's way better.
For what we think of Andy Dalton,
yes,
his numbers will tell you a different story.
If I read you his numbers and made you guess who it was, you would be guessing players way better than the perception of Andy Dalton.
Yes. And so and the game has changed so much because now we throw the ball so much more. But, you know, Jerry's still, you know, it's not even close. Jerry's the GOAT. But, like, receptions, it's like, Tony Gonzalez and Jason Witten are third and fourth. You're like, what? You get into like Marvin Harrison, no. Chris Carter, Tim Brown.
They were around a long time.
Like for me, and this was the opposite. Like when Terrell Owens retired, I think we did the opposite. I think with Julio, some people are trying to make him better, and I think with T.O., we're trying to lessen him.
Well, he lessened himself.
He did. But
because of his personality.
And God, he was good.
He was amazing.
Yes.
But he did not do himself any
favors. No, he did not.
By his antics.
He did not.
Push-ups in his driveway.
Sit-ups and all that.
Or sit-ups, yeah.
Yeah. The other one, too, is that Julio Jones is the classic example. What do I always say about, do not give contracts to receivers once they turn 30. Just don't do it. It will not end well. And for as great as Julio Jones was, once he turned 30, it was like cliff. And you're just a lemming going off that thing. It is just weird how receivers just do not age well after they reach that that point. I mean, he was 1,000 yards and you know, 8 to 9 to 10 touchdowns every year, and then he turned 30. 51, 31, 24, 11, thanks for coming. It's just, you do not age like fine wine. You age like moldy bread.
Somebody wants Andy Dalton's numbers, and I'm going to give it to him. Okay?
Yeah, they're good. Because this came up the other day because someone, I forget who it was. It was, you know, I think it was Hasselback, Matt Hasselback, said that he thought a solid comp for Shedeur Sanders, you know, because they do the, we did this yesterday. They, who were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about Cooper Flagg. Because they do ceiling comparison, floor comparison, and then like solid, right? Like middle of the road. And I think Hasselback said that he thought a mid, like more than likely a good comp for Shedeur Sanders was Andy Dalton. And people, you know, how dare you, Andy?
Well, we just don't think of Andy Dalton as really any good at all.
And Matt Hasselback was like, what are you talking about? And like, Andy Dalton has had a really nice career.
So here are his numbers. Yeah. He went 84 and 82. Mm-hmm. So he started, 84, 82, and 2.
Yeah.
So he started 168 games, 39,500 yards, which, by the way, is 26th all time, exactly. Which is right where Julio Jones was. He has 253 tutties, 150 picks, and a QBR of 87.5.
That's a really,
it's
really
way better
good
than you
career.
Would, it's way better than you would think for, yes. for Andy Dalton.
Exactly. It's right there. Like, well, some of those stats, like you said, it's on par all-time ranks with Julio Jones.
Well, I think what we forget about Dalton is that in Cincinnati, yeah. they were pretty good with
yes.
him. They won 10, 11 games every year. Look at his record. From the time he was a rookie, mm-hmm. they went 9-7. Then they went 10-6, 11-5, 10-5-1, and 10-3. Mm-hmm. And then it flamed out in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. He stuck around there, but he didn't start. Well, he started a lot of games, but not all the games for the next 3 or 4 years. And then he went on to Dallas, Chicago, New Orleans, and Carolina, and he was whatever. But so,
some of his comps, by the way, you know, they do the, you know, for 12 years. Some of the names that are his comps that are in there, Joe Flacco, Bob Greasy, Drew Bledsoe, Jim Everett, Troy Aikman,
that's
Ron Jaworski.
That's crazy.
You know, it's...
Joe Flacco is his first comp?
Yeah, Joe Flacco.
Because when you think of Andy Dalton and you think of Joe Flacco...
Yeah.
I don't think of the same quarterback.
No,
not even close.
The only difference was is that, you know, I hate to do this because Flacco had some nice playoff runs. If you put Andy Dalton on that Joe Flacco Ravens team with that defense, don't we think that Andy Dalton probably has a Super Bowl? And if he does,
no.
You don't think he wins the Super Bowl with that team?
No, because I remember that team and freaking Joe Flacco played so good.
He played his ass
they
off.
They needed him to be as good as their defense was.
Yeah.
He was amazing in the playoffs. Earned himself a bunch of money. Now, Dalton maybe could have done that, but I don't think so.
Andy's always going to get looked down upon, too, because we judge players so much more about their playoffs and how they do in the playoffs. And I don't think that Andy ever won a
He also was with that suck-ass organization that gave him jack S.
And that's not his fault.
Quarterback rating-wise, and I know this, quarterback rating is not the end-all be-all.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever been in the playoffs. Andy Dalton.
They've never been in the
playoffs. No, they were in the playoffs. They always lost in the first.
Teams.
Well, they always lost.
I'm not seeing his playoff stats here. I gotta.
By the way, quarterback rating, you said it was 87.
Yeah.
Not that quarterback ratings in the end all to be all, but Joe Flacco's quarterback rating is 84.
Is it really?
Yeah. What would the total? So how many years has Andy Dalton played? Do you have that back in front of you?
14.
14. So Flacco's played 17, although some of those, the last couple.
How many starts does Flacco have?
Flacco has 196.
Okay, Dalton 168.
And his record?
84, 82, and 2.
Okay, Flacco's 105 and 86. So
and then,
better.
Yards, 39,500.
Okay, 45,000 for Flacco.
Yeah, and tutties,
257.
And then interceptions, 150 for Dalton.
And 162.
Yeah.
And a rating that's slightly better for Dalton.
Pretty comparable.
Look, and like I said, I'll give Joe Flacco. That guy had some balls in the playoffs.
But Will's right. It's the play. That's what it is.
I have his playoff stats. Do you want
Dalton's?
Them? They're really bad.
Are they?
Yeah.
He's got four playoff games. They didn't win any of them. He had a passer rating of 57.8. He had 873 yards, a touchdown, and six interceptions.
Oh. God.
He averaged 218 yards. He averaged an interception, over an interception per game, obviously less than a touchdown. That's why people don't think of him well.
That is right. That is no Joe Flacco.
No. Flacco, when they went cooking there and won the Super Bowl, Flacco had some big moments.
Okay.
I just, you know. I would be interested to see, because I think Andy Dalton, and again, I know I like him better, but it's he's better than Geno Smith, but that sort of quarterback in a good system with an elite defense and a run game, I just think if Flacco doesn't win the Super Bowl, we think about Flacco very differently. It's the Eli Manning thing. Eli Manning's a really good quarterback. Is he responsible for those Super Bowls? He played real well, but he's not responsible for him, but it just changes our perception of everything when you win those. And of course, Eli won too.
All right. The next segment was supposed to be this segment, but it will be the dark money behind Duke Hoops.
Yes. And as someone points out, he is a ginger, so that's...
It doesn't help him.
It's a giant strike.
Be nice to those guys.
It's a giant strike against
him. Are you a gingy if you grew, if you had hair?
Not totally, but pretty darn close.
Really?
Yeah. It's a little more brown than red, but it's pretty close to red.
Huh. The resident fan ginger,
yeah.
Will Ortner.
He has no soul.
Yeah, that's what they say, right?
Yeah. Clearly.
My brother's a ginger.
Yeah,
and
he is.
I can confirm he has no soul.
See? South Park guys knew what they were talking about.
All right, we'll be right back on The Fan.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to the Final Four, where tomorrow we get Auburn, Florida, followed by Duke, Houston.
Thought you were talking about Texas and South Carolina.
Yeah, that's underway, isn't it?
Is that the Final Four?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's up. It's playing right now. 12-4, Texas.
Suck it,
South Carolina. Ooh, the Horns.
Good.
Yeah, I root against the Gamecocks.
I do, too. The Lady Cocks. I'm not a fan of Don Staley.
Well, they've won too much. Although, we can't really root for Texas, can we?
I don't know. Why not?
I'm behind UCLA in that one. West Coast team.
Is it UCLA and, the UConn, right?
UConn.
Old Paige Buckets?
In a move that's highly unusual for a major college program, there is virtually no online footprint for Duke Basketball's Booster Collective. Oh. This is why I tease the dark money behind Duke Basketball.
Interesting.
It is interesting. Now, it's not because they don't have one.
I would assume so. Yeah.
Because
you tell me the people aren't going to Duke for free.
They don't really point them out on broadcast, but if you're paying attention in college basketball, a lot of these sort of collective bigwigs that have a bunch of money that are donating to these collectives, they're at games and they love the the camera on them and the spotlight.
Makes
and
sense.
Being the guy.
Sure.
You know. So you can, it's kind of become a thing.
Yeah.
But at Duke, you will not see these guys. Ever.
Why is Duke so different? It goes back to the whole dark money.
This is from the Wall Street Journal.
Jeffrey Epstein? Is he doling out cash from the grave?
It says, people involved with the operation say the group's silence is intentional. They say their goal is to give Coach John Shire the resources to compete, to support his vision, and never be a distraction from the ultimate goal of winning a national championship.
Mm.
What little evidence there is of the group's existence is buried deep in corporate records. in March of 2023, 2 weeks after Shire's first season, and they lost in the NCAA tournament, the round of 32, three Duke alumni incorporated a nonprofit in Delaware with an address listed as an office building in Arkansas. Mm. They called it One Vision Futures Fund and applied to do business in North Carolina.
Boy, this certainly seems pretty shady that you're putting all this like in different state corporations and weird names. I love it.
In its annual report for last year, there was no hiding its purpose because the form says name, image, and likeness. The description of nature of business is sports NIL.
Sure.
So they're not hiding that. The address, as it's known, belongs to the office of Duke alum Jeff Fox, the CEO and founder of the investment firm Circumference Group.
I'm guessing they manage several billions of dollars worth of investments.
He's listed on incorporating documents as one of three executive officers, along with fellow alumni Dan Levitan, co-founder of the venture capital firm Maveron, and Steve Dunker, a former partner at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
So basically just three rich dudes
that love Duke.
They are no strangers to supporting their alma mater. More than two decades ago, Levitan convinced the school to start the Duke Basketball Venture Capital Co-Investment Fund, which was believed to be the first VC fund supporting a single college sports team. So there are, it's funny, like this whole thing is about how secretive they are.
Sure.
And yet there's pictures of them on this story. Like, I mean, they're not really hiding.
They're just not flashy.
They're not flashy at all.
Well, and it's obviously three guys. I mean, every NIL has a face to it, but.
And that's what they said.
Yeah.
It's not a bunch of kind of rich guys helping out and getting all flashy.
It's three really rich guys.
Well,
that's like the SMU model, right? SMU got around a table, was it like eight people, and just said, we have enough money to do it. We don't need other people. Whereas I know like with USC, with UW, even with Oregon, I've heard that it's not just one person, that they try to kind of wrap their arms around a greater community. But if you've got three guys that, you know, that are worth enough money and that are committed, you really don't need a giant NIL web. You just need a couple guys that are willing to write checks.
Yeah, because it's not that much money.
No.
I mean,
basketball is different than, because they were saying in the revenue sharing world, was it 22 mil, I think, roughly, that the house settlement supposedly is going to let you split. They're saying that the big college basketball programs are going to be between $2 and $4 million. And that some of the ones that don't have football may be willing to go to six. That's why the guy left Maryland to go to Villanova. Villanova doesn't have a football team to split with it, so they're like, we'll give you six. But even if you're saying the top schools are $6 million, that's not that much. And then you throw in the NIL to it, whereas a college football roster with revenue sharing and the NIL, dude, that may run you $40 million a year. You can probably run a basketball program, I'm guessing, somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 12.
Well, what's scary about this, okay, there's a couple of things. One is they just formed this for this class, this freshman class with Cooper Flagg in them.
Yeah.
They were kind of late to the party. Mm. And so if this is the product of what these guys are going to do,
what they can get,
the rest of the college basketball world's in trouble because this team is awesome.
Yeah. And they're making promises and then they're not keeping them.
Exactly. These guys are like, dude, it's the three of us. We got a bunch of money. It's for Duke. We don't want any recognition.
I actually think this is kind of like this.
It's the way to go.
It's the way to go.
If you can do it.
If you can do this, because now NIL can be run through the school. It doesn't have to be separated. So you got three guys that are in contact with the AD. The AD goes to the coach. So, you know, Shire comes to him and says, hey, I got a freshman kid and dude, it's going to cost him $6 million to get him here. And they're like, oh my God, $6 million. And you're like, what are we going to do? Yeah. We go talk to these three guys and we say, hey, $6 million. And they're like, all right, here, boom, done. As opposed to, you know, jumping through a bunch of hoops.
Well, and the Krzyzewski, he created something called the Legacy Fund when he was there.
Yeah.
And the minimum donation for the Legacy Fund is $1 million.
Okay.
So they already have those boosters,
sure,
and they're already in their pockets. Mm-hmm. This they won't say what this roster costs here,
yeah,
but you have Knippel, the big guy in the middle was a 5-star freshman, yeah, and Flag. You have Flag, who's making millions.
Sure.
So they won't say, but it's probably the priciest of any in college basketball, and it didn't. None of it came from their regular Legacy Fund boosters. It all just came from these bros. So, look, watch out for freaking Duke. Well, bastards.
I mean, we're in a new era now where, again, the people that can easily raise the money and not have to fight for it. Because you think about how many programs, basketball and otherwise, even Georgia. Like, Georgia's the best college football program since Alabama. And we have heard both Alabama and Georgia, from a football standpoint, both make comments in the last 2 to 3 years that NIL is a problem for them. That they are struggling to try to get more, and they need their boosters to step up. And, you know, I know UW, that's a real problem up at UW. They're trying to get it in order. I don't know if you've seen recently, but USC's finally doing something on the recruiting trail. USC's finally making progress, and it's because they got their NIL figured out. Finally, they have enough money coming in, and they can do that. So, you know, and Oregon has been dialed in since day one. So the people that have figured out or are figuring out NIL are the ones that have hit the ground running. And this is going to be the future of college sports. Those that have it are going to excel, and those that don't are always going to be behind the eight ball, kind of kicking, clawing, and scratching, trying to come up with enough cash.
Don't you think Smarty Pants schools may have a leg up because of the alumni?
Unfortunately, a lot of smarty pants schools like Stanford don't care.
Well, but all it takes is a couple. It
takes a
couple. Duke has a bunch that don't care.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's not true.
They got three that do, and that's all.
Well, I know, but maybe that's not true because Duke basketball is such a big thing.
Sure.
Whereas at Stanford, although their athletics are a big deal at Stanford.
Yeah, but it's the
overall.
It's
not really the big football and basketball never have really been that.
Nope.
That big. But nope. So Duke is a little bit different animal. But yeah. I just wonder if maybe the schools where, well, I guess SMU has just a bunch of rich guys, yep, oil guys.
Yep.
But is that a smarty pants school? It's more of a.
No, it's just a rich oil guy. You know, it's.
Maybe there's no correlation to that. But I just wonder with alumni that, with just as many successful alumni come out of some of these schools like Duke and Stanford and whatever.
You would think, right?
You'd think maybe that could lead to more funds.
You would think places that are putting out Fortune 500 company presidents and CEOs or, you know, you would think that that would be a leg up. But again, you just got to get a few that that care. Because you're right. It doesn't take many. It just takes deep pockets. And I'll tell you right now, I'd rather have two rich guys than 100 two rich guys that are committed than a big, wide, deep donor base. That's just more cooks in the kitchen. And if all I need is to get to one single number, I go back to the SMU thing. The most amazing thing that I think has happened in college sports in the last 30 years is SMU in the days where all that matters is getting to a conference and getting TV money. And SMU said, if you let us into the ACC, we will not take a dime for like 10 or 15 years, whatever it is, whenever the ACC deal runs out. And everyone went, are you kidding me? Like, no money. And they're like, what's your payout? And they said $30 million a year. And they said, okay, so what is that? Over 10 or 12 years, so like, what, $300 million? And they all got together and laughed. And we're like, that's all we have to come up with. It's $300 million over like 10 years? They're like, yeah, I think we can manage that. And they're like, cool, welcome to the ACC. That's what money does. Whereas, think about all the other schools that are just fighting and clawing to try to get some leg up, and SMU laughed at it. Why? Because they have like 10 guys that are billionaires that love SMU athletics. If Washington State or Oregon State had 10 guys that were billionaires that loved Cougar or Beaver athletics, they would not be in the situation where they're at right now. If Oregon State could just get that NVIDIA guy to give an S, Oregon State, all of Oregon State's problems would go away tomorrow.
I think he has more money than Phil Knight.
Yes. They just got to get him to care.
But he doesn't.
He doesn't care.
Well, I don't think he cares about sports.
No.
He's donated to the university.
Yes,
but
not, yeah. Someone said, I love my Uncle Phil. Yes, you do.
In the news is next, where does Oregon rank among the most expensive states for gas? Here's Will. All right, welcome back to our show. Joey Harrington coming up next hour. He's back in town. We're talking sports, but not right now. It is April 4, 2025. It is time for In the News. I'm your noted newsman. Hello. Thank you. Today is Hug a Newsperson Day.
Oh.
So you can hug me in the break.
So if you see Isaac Rupp out on the streets tonight.
Yeah, which you won't.
You just go. If you see Isaac Rupp in his living room, you can give him a hug.
It is also National Cordon Bleu Day.
I do like a good cordon bleu.
God, me too.
I don't know where you find them.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of, yeah, like they're not.
No, they're not out.
They're not
about,
around.
No, but when I do get one, they're delightful. There's a.
What is the actual definition of cordon bleu?
It's a breaded chicken, and then inside
it's
is
got
a,
cheese.
It's,
right?
It's a ham, and then there's like a Swiss or like a Brie cheese. In
Does
there.
It have to be those specific?
I don't think it has to be that specific cheese, but the breaded chicken with the ham, yes, I do believe that is a traditional cordon bleu. There's a diner that does a cordon bleu like omelet that is quite good. Chicken, ham, the Swiss cheese on top with the sauce. It's yeah, and then there's usually some sort of sauce on top. It's delightful, but you just don't see them, and that's it's a shame.
Where do you think Oregon ranks among states least or most expensive gas?
It's a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question.
Well, I don't get gas anymore.
Because I feel like it's not been that bad lately.
You know, I'm out of the gas game because I...
Yeah, you're a soy boy.
I'm a soy boy, and so I drive
$3.20. So the national average for gas is $3.20 a gallon start of April.
So I'm going to say we're higher than the average.
We definitely are higher.
I know Washington is always higher. We have a Washington gas tax. So I think Oregon's a little better, but I'm gonna say we're like top 20 expensive gas because we're going to tax it.
We are the fifth most expensive in the nation.
Yep. Yeah, we got a tax. Love those taxes.
Does Washington rank higher?
I know Washington.
It feels like it does.
We have a bad gas tax.
Well, in Vancouver, you pay $4.13 on average. Mm-hmm. That is higher than Portland, which is $3.96.
Yeah. Somebody just said they paid $5 per gallon in the Pearl.
Really?
Yeah.
Find a different gas station, dude.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So the state average in Washington is $4.21, third most expensive in the nation.
Hawaii.
So we're both top five.
Is Hawaii most expensive?
Soon. California, $4.85. Hawaii, $4.53. Followed by Washington, Nevada, and Oregon.
By the way, Washington, we are the fourth highest taxed gallon of gas in the country. They ding you with 52 cents a gallon.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's higher than I thought.
52 cents a gallon.
But, you know, as taxes go...
Oregon is 10th. They get you at 40 cents a gallon.
Oh, okay. That's also higher than I thought.
Yeah.
As taxes go, are you okay with the gas tax? I mean, you know, they're going to hit you some way, right? It's like, of all the things they're going to hit you with, I mean...
I don't know.
I don't think it's... Well, the worst thing to tax.
And now they're trying to do some stuff. Like I know now when every year I register my car, they're going to stick me in the shooter there because I'm not paying gas. So they're going to get your blood one way or another. So now they're going to charge you more to register your EV. And I've read a thing where states are going to start trying to do by mile. Like they're going to take how many miles you drive when you go to register your car, and they're going to ding you that way.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they get you one way or another. I mean, I don't know. I understand that we have to pay for things, but it's very complicated for me. I wouldn't mind paying a good hunk of taxes if I actually felt that I got stuff out of it.
But well, you are getting gas.
I feel like all we do is piss away our money.
And well, actually, you're not getting
gas. And then we don't get anything for it. Like, if we had pristine roads and no potholes and everything was run smoothly, by all means. But I don't. I just... feel like it's just in a constant state of just crapping away our money and then asking for more.
Jason, I know you've been wondering.
I have been wondering.
What is Portland's most iconic sandwich shop?
Yes.
Because you do love a good sandwich.
I love
your big sandwich guy.
I had a delightful Reuben at the Horse Brass last night, and let me tell you, on point.
The Reuben. You went with the Reuben.
It was a corned beef Reuben, and it was delightful on a marble rye. Come on.
I have a hot take about Reuben. Well, it's actually not a hot take. It's just my personal opinion about Reubens is they are delicious.
Yes.
However, the Reuben is oftentimes, and I mean often like 95% of the time, it is not the best sandwich on a menu.
Hmm.
You see what I'm going with that?
I see where you're going.
Like, you know, you have a bunch of... Because a place where you would want to order a Reuben is probably adept at a sandwich.
Yes.
Therefore, they have other good sandwiches.
Agreed.
And so I never order a Reuben because while good, there are other sandwiches that catch my eye.
I understand. You know, and I think that's a valid point. It is. I don't eat... to be fair, I don't eat a lot of Reubens.
So you ordered a Reuben. Where were you?
Horse Brass.
Okay, Horse Brass Saloon. So it's just like a bar, right?
Yeah, it's an English pub.
And they have sandwich. Like, what other sandwiches were you know did you have to choose from?
They had fish and chips. They had a pot pie. So we did the old, I order a pot pie, buddy orders a like the sandwich, and then you kind of, we do like family style. So we had a couple things, but they had a turkey sandwich, like an open faced turkey sandwich. They had a Reuben. They had a French dip. They had several things. The French dip was intriguing, but, you know, corned beef, like a good corned beef. But it is not a full sandwich place. There was only probably four hot sandwiches. Whereas if you go to, I'm with you, if you go to a sandwich shop.
And that's why you got the Reuben.
And that's why I got the Reuben. But had you had a wide, if you give me, if there is a 10 hot sandwich menu, I'm with you. I'll never order the Reuben.
No.
Because there will be a better sandwich.
I like specialty sandwiches just like I like specialty cocktails.
I'm with you.
Like, wait, what are you doing with that? That aioli?
Hey, what? Well, here's the thing. If you put a cheesesteak on a menu and you put a Reuben, I'm getting a cheesesteak every time. Every single time.
If I only have those two choices?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, in a wide variety, there's just, like you said, sandwiches, there's going to be probably a better, more appealing option. I'm a sucker every now and then for a nice meatball sub. Give me a nice meatball sandwich? Delightful. Maybe a chicken cutlet.
All right. Portland's most iconic sandwich shop is, we'll tell you, next on The Fan. All right. Hot 5-5 coming up here. Yeah. This is in the news April 4. 2025. Okay. Sandwiches. We've got...
love them.
We've got a...
I want another sandwich.
We've got a story on Portland's most iconic sandwich shop. So this is from Tasting Table. They are a digital media company focused on food, restaurants, recipes, and reviews.
We do have a lot of good sandwich places.
And they went, and I said Portland, this is Oregon's. So they did a list of the most iconic sandwich shops in every state.
Mm-hmm.
And their pick in Oregon is... Huber's.
Never been.
What do you think about that?
I've heard many good things about it, and I've never made it over there.
Known for their Spanish coffees. Now, I gotta tell you, the photo of the sandwich that they put on here, my God, it looks like something you'd get in a plastic baggie at a golf tournament.
Really?
Oh, it looks... look at this. Oh, this is the photo they put on there for the iconic sandwich.
Oh, for hell's sake.
It's like a... I don't know, it's like a turkey sandwich on white bread.
Is that...
What's that about?
Are we doing a very Portland thing here? Because everyone always, like, you hear about that place. Is this like a Portland hipster thing where if I show up and I order this sandwich, I'm going to be like, where's the other seven of them? Because that's the whole point of a sandwich, too, is that, like, it's, I need my sandwich to have some girth to it. I need to look at that sandwich and think, can I handle that? That's what I want out of a sandwich.
Well,
I want my sandwich to intimidate me a little bit.
Now, that sandwich doesn't look great. It's just a bad... I don't know why they put that photo on there.
Yeah.
But apparently Huber's is known for its turkey sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a number of hot and cold options for you.
Interesting.
The one they put on there is just turkey, lettuce, tomato on sourdough.
Boo.
Turkey, cream cheese, cranberry sandwich. Mm. They have the Clubhouse, which is a triple decker with turkey, bacon, lettuce, and tomato.
Yeah.
They have the California Club triple decker with turkey, avocado, lettuce, and tomato, whole wheat, and the hot turkey sandwich, which is served open face and topped with mushroom gravy and a choice of sage dressing or mashed potatoes.
Can I tell you that that isn't necessarily blowing my hair back?
Yeah, I'm with you. I've never been to Huber's for the sandwiches, therefore I cannot comment, but I did not know they were known for their sandwiches.
No.
But apparently they are Oregon's best sandwich shop.
All I know is if that, I hope that photo is not indicative of the size, because I look at that and I'll walk, if I saw that sandwich in the window,
I would be disgusted.
I would walk right by be like, we're not doing that.
It's not a good photo.
No. You walk by Lardo and you take a look at that sandwich and you think to yourself, oh, now that,
dude,
that's a sandwich that I can get behind.
I would have sex with Lardo.
Yes, as well you should.
I'm serious.
So good.
Now I'm looking for Washington here. Hold on. I have to scroll all the way to the W's.
You know who else? I mean, because you promote this, but Laurelhurst has a
great
sandwich.
Great sandwiches.
Yes.
Great burger, too.
Yes. They do a nice job.
Washington is way down there. Okay.
It's going to be everything up in, it'll be up in Seattle.
It's
whatever.
Called the Antique Sandwich, and it is in Tacoma.
Yeah.
It was originally a grocery store built in 1916, but it was only in 1973 the owner started selling antiques. Around this time, they invested in an espresso machine and started selling sandwiches. The menu features heaps of wholesome and healthy sandwiches, sprout and tomato, avocado cheese, cucumber and cream cheese,
whatever.
Homemade hummus with sprout and tomato.
Lame.
But there's also a good selection of meat sandwiches, including corned beef. The beef is baked in-house, a poor boy, a Reuben, meatloaf, and more.
Dude, you this whole list now officially becomes stupid because, one, you pick some candy-ass tiny sandwich, and then in Washington...
There's the sandwich that they have.
Oh, for
the
God's
photo.
Sakes. Describe That's worse than the Huber's.
What do you see in there?
That's a bunch of soy boy BS right there.
Goes with
that
your
is.
Car.
No, exactly. No one's going there for that wants a real sandwich. You knew it was bad when they started out with healthy, so many healthy options.
Gross.
And bean sprouts. If you're starting out with bean sprouts, that's what you lead with? Get out of here.
Well, I don't know about other states, but I can tell you, tasting table,
mm-hmm.
I'm not really buying this list based off of what we're seeing from Oregon and Washington.
No.
Okay.
No. Because I know, as a frequenter of many fine sandwich establishments, that
so what is the most iconic sandwich shop to Jason Sukanik, who's probably more qualified to do this than tasting table is anyway?
There's two.
Okay.
If I'm picking my best sandwich place, I can go anywhere in the Portland metropolitan area. Metropolitan area. Sandwich or Lardo's. You're not going to go wrong.
And what's sandwich?
And you can get anything on any of that menu, and you will be like, now that is a fine sandwich.
Is sandwich a standalone place?
What do you mean?
Like, it's a one of one?
I do believe that is a one of one. I don't think there's another one. It is off of Burnside. I don't know. It's over by like I think it's
East
over
Side.
By, yeah, it's.
I think I've driven by it.
Yeah,
never eaten there.
You should. Phenomenal.
Okay.
Like if I pulled up here, let me. Yeah. Like. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What is that? What am I looking at?
You're going to wrangle with that.
What even is that?
You're going to wrangle with that. Again, you're going to look at that and think to yourself, can I handle what that's bringing to the table? And that's what it should be. That's a little beef and sauerkraut right there.
Wow. All right, that's your In the News.
This is their meatball.
That looks good.
Yeah.
I can't get behind the chips, though.
Well, yeah.
I don't like chips.
But they're fresh made. Look at you.
That is in the news April 4, 2025, brought to you by The Advocates, injury attorneys at advocateslaw.com. The Hot 5 is next on The Fan.